The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races!
Some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
This is part one of your 2020 wide receiver preview. Adam Azer with Dave Richard, Ben Gretsch, and Heath Cummings. Can't think of anything clever to say about wide receivers. Somebody say something interesting or clever about this position.
I'd be happy to, Adam.
Great.
At least 49 receivers have averaged at least 10 PPR points per game in four of the past five seasons. 49 different receivers have given you 10 PPR points per game. Now, you're probably thinking, 10 PPR points, that's nothing. Anybody can do that. Only 11 receivers total have averaged 20 PPR points per game in the last 5 years. 11 total, not 49 per year. So there's a big old glut between 10 PPR and like 19.9 PPR here. And it's kind of setting the table to hear about how deep wide receiver has been and how deep wide receiver will continue to be.
That was really good. That was really good. Okay, Heath, try to
I'm
beat
done
that.
For the show. I'm leaving. I'm done. That's good.
Top that.
I'm out.
Over the past two seasons, Davante Adams has averaged more fantasy points per game in PPR than any running back scored last year besides Christian McCaffrey.
That's pretty good. I like these are good. Ben, what the hell do you have?
Nothing.
All right. I'll tell you that in terms of average draft position trends, we've had 25, is it? I think 25 wide receivers taken in the first round over the last 5 years, but only seven in the last 2 years. So it's gotten a little bit more running back heavy. It's actually 24 wide receivers in the last 5 years, but only seven over the last 2 years. So that's a bit of a change. And the wide receivers that have been taken in round three in the last 2 years have done better. That's not really a surprise because they're higher up in ADP because fewer wide receivers are going in round one. Hope that makes sense to everybody. But I think that trend is kind of continuing this year. It's very, very running back heavy. And this is in PPR I'm talking about. In PPR, only seven wide receivers over the last 2 years were round one picks, according to Fantasy Football Calculator. All right, so give me your overall thoughts on the wide receiver position this season. Ben, what can you tell us here? What your overall thoughts on wide receiver?
I think it's a bit misunderstood. I think there are I think it's deep, but I also think that there's a pretty significant drop off after about the top 40. I think that we talk a lot about consistency, but it's the most high variance position. And especially in leagues where you start three receivers, that variance that we talk about on an individual level doesn't impact your roster as much as one would think, because you don't actually have a whole lot of weeks during the year where true boom or bust receivers all boom in the same week or all bust in the same week. It all kind of levels out, which goes along with a lot of other points I've made throughout the year. And I also think just generally the idea of like a boom or bust receiver is kind of a poor concept. It's something that I think we apply retroactively. Guys like T.Y. Hilton, as soon as he started booming more frequently, we just called him a stud. And other guys that we thought of as, you know, maybe in that same profile that didn't boom a lot, we just called them outright busts. So I don't think there's actually that many clear boom or bust receivers even. So like I have a little bit of a different philosophy on receiver. Generally, I don't mind the high variance. I kind of swerve into it. I like to target high weekly upside. And understand that guys are going to have some down weeks on my rosters.
Okay. Dave, how do you feel? What do you think?
Well, I just want to kind of pick at Ben's brain here for a little bit. So if you had to rank the types of different receivers in fantasy football, obviously you would want the high volume, high production studs with a lot of consistency at the top.
Absolutely.
is second, is the second thing you look for just the guys that could have smash weeks where they're putting up 40 plus in PPR? Or would you rather have guys that it might be consistent for half the year? Brandon Cooks is the poster boy for, at least Brandon Cooks before last year, where 7 or 8 games out of the whole season, he'll come through for good fantasy production, 15 plus in PPR, 10 plus in non-PPR. If you had to pick between those two categories, call it Will Fuller or Brandon Cooks, and it's funny how they're teammates now, which category do you shoot for first on draft day?
What's the difference between Fuller and Cooks? Sorry, Cooks is more consistent, you're saying?
Cooks is more consistent than Fuller, but doesn't necessarily have the same amount of smash weeks. All right, so Fuller in a given season, he might have 4 or 5 games where he's just awesome. And thank God you started him and he's not on your bench. And for those other 11 or 12 games, you're kind of like, why the hell did I start him? He should have been on my bench. Versus Brandon Cooks, who you draft knowing, okay, half the year, he's going to be good for my team. And the other half, I'll just take my lumps with his, you know, 10 points in PPR, 7 points in non-PPR.
So, yeah, I guess my answer would be I don't really have a preference. I see those guys as very similar, and I think the differences that you're drawing are kind of just variants. Like Cooks showed that last year when he was no longer a guy who could do it for 8 games, and Fuller, I think, still has in his potential range future seasons.
I don't want
where
you to
he
use,
is that I, type of guy.
Right. I don't want you to use those two as the example.
Okay.
I want you to just say – let me know which type of receiver you like better on draft. I'm going to ask Heath the same thing and then Adam after you.
Sure. Yeah. I think both of those guys I would kind of classify similarly because they have the high average depth of targets. They're downfield guys. And with that, you have more valuable targets. Targets still matter more than air yards. They matter about 2 to 1 more than air yards, but air yards are very significant and downfield targets are more valuable. And more particularly, downfield weapons are the guys that we see have these splash efficiency seasons where they crush and then we all talk about regression the next year. But those are downfield profile type receivers almost exclusively that have those huge efficiency seasons. So I'm targeting guys like that. Both Fuller and Cooks earlier in his career before I was more worried about concussions fit the type of receiver that I targeted because they're guys that I think could smash in efficiency and their targets are more valuable than what the market maybe like ADP is justifying because I think targets are still focused on more than air yards relative Heath, to their values.
Heath, receiver who's good half the year or receiver who's got 4 or 5 smash weeks over the course of the year?
I don't think there are very many in that 4 or 5 smash week category that actually I draft or are drafted in the first 30 or 40 wide receivers generally. I think like if you're only going to have 4 good weeks all year long, you're just a bad fantasy option. Most.
Okay.
But what I will say is I think like everything Ben said, I was sitting here listening and thinking that makes perfect sense for what Ben values generally. And I think I value that more in a non-PPR league as well. He's right. Those downfield targets have the big outlier games. They also are more likely to not give you anything at all in a given week because they have to make do on their 5 or 6 targets that they're going to get that week. And they might boom on them and they might not do anything on them. So I do think that you need to do a good job with receivers. We talk about it with running backs, with guys like Tariq Cohen and James White. We talk about it with Julian Edelman and how you only want to draft him in PPR. Or maybe Jarvis Landry is that way for a while. Jameson Crowder might be that way now.
Sterling Shepard.
But I don't necessarily agree about Shepard. He gets about a yard or two more per reception than those other guys we were talking about. But but I do think there's also the other side of that equation where someone, and I would say Kenny Golladay and A.J. Brown, but they might happen to get a lot more targets this year, are a lot more, like I may poo-poo them at a certain point in the draft in PPR, whereas in non-PPR, I think Kenny Golladay might be a top 5 or 6 wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. I agree on Brown too. I think Brown's a top 12 type of receiver in non-PPR compared to PPR. Adam, what's your take?
Well, I don't really want to give my take. I've gathered through the comments that people don't really want me to give my take that much. So.
Let's
hear it, Adam. Come on.
We want
to hear it.
I'm not sure.
What those comments say.
I have an answer to that question. I don't like the guys who are really boom or bust. Ben said that. he doesn't really consider that a thing, I guess, the boomer bust. I do, but only with a few players. The two that I always used to avoid in drafts in their primes were Emmanuel Sanders and DeSean Jackson. And I still think those guys are boomer bust receivers, but now you can get them super late. But you had to use like a round six pick on them. So that player would probably be Marvin Jones, who I'm probably not going to take unless I can get him in round seven or later, which I might be able to. Will Fuller, I think Will Fuller has a chance for more consistency. So I don't buy that he's just the guy that he has been. I think in 2018, he was extremely consistent, and now he doesn't have DeAndre Hopkins. It's an opportunity for him to be very consistent and be very awesome. I look for targets, and I look for young wide receivers. There's one thing that I'm really buying into. It's what we've seen from sophomore wide receivers. I think year two is the year that wide receivers take a big leap. We have seen it over and over again. Guys like Kenny Golladay, Chris Godwin, DJ Chark, Cortland Sutton, Michael Gallup, they were not top 40 in ADP, and they all had very good sophomore seasons. Some of them had incredibly good sophomore seasons. So I'm looking at last year's rookies to take a big step forward. I wasn't really answering your question, Dave, but that's
you're going to nail that, by the way.
I hope so. I'm a little worried that no training camp. I know it's going to be bad for the rookies, or, you know, that the altered offseason, let's just say. Mm-hmm. It might not be good for the sophomore. I mean, that could have been a really valuable time for them. All the mini camps and all the offseason OTAs, all that stuff. Maybe that would hold them back. But I think we are ready for that group of wide receivers, the 2019 rookies, to take over a little bit. And they could all outperform their ADP, or most of
them. The ones with a hat tip to Heath, the ones that are in a situation that's just it's exactly the same as last year. They don't have a new quarterback. They don't have a new offense to learn. Everything is steady from 2019. Those will be the ones you'll see the biggest step up from.
One of the big things to look at with that as well. I just wrote about second year receivers at CBS. You can go to cbssports.com, see my comments on all the individual players. But I gave a hat tip to a guy named Blair Andrews, who works over at RotoViz, and he did some research that showed that highly efficient rookies see substantially more PPR points in year two than inefficient rookies. And he is defining efficiency based on like expected fantasy points of where the targets occurred on the field. So like red zone targets are worth more. And it was for two reasons. One, those players tended to stay more efficient, slightly more efficient than the inefficient rookies in their ensuing season. But more importantly, they gained a ton of opportunity compared to the inefficient rookies. And this is work he did last offseason. And as I was writing about the second year rookies, I realized that almost all the ones that you're seeing going in the high leverage rounds, actually all the ones that you're seeing going in the high leverage rounds, were efficient last year as rookies on their target opportunity. They're all set up to see, if the long-term trend is any example, to see an uptick in opportunity and potentially to stay more efficient than average based on these long-term trends.
All right, we'll certainly get into that a little bit more. I also kind of looked at the year two, like we did this exercise a few months ago of receivers who had 900 or more yards in their rookie season since 2000. And when you look at the list, it is a really, really good list. But the ones who took a step back in year two, like I think Eddie Royal, Michael Clayton, some of them were kind of a victim of quarterback play. And so I don't know, that could be a little bit of a concern for some of those guys. But like not DK Metcalf, that's a good thing. But anyway, some more overall thoughts. And by the way, this is wide receiver preview part one. Part two, you know, we're going to go through ADP. This one is going to be more general, more strategy focused, stuff like that. Is there a spot in the draft that you guys feel is great for wide receivers? I always take wide receivers in round whatever.
Four. 100%.
Yeah. Three, four, five.
Not surprising if anyone's heard me talk this year.
Is that fair to say 3-4-5 is the wide receiver goldmine?
It is for me.
I feel like anywhere after round one, you can find a receiver who's worth the pick. But if you're looking for big value, I think rounds 4 and 5, and I think you might be able to make a case for 7 and 8 as well.
I love that way you just phrased that.
Players.
Not to cut you off, but yeah. I love the way you phrase that. Anywhere you
it's
can find
really a receiver. That's how deep receiver is this year, Ben.
But then the answer is, where is running back the worst value? And that's that running back dead zone I've talked so much about. That's where there's not as much upside. We're drafting guys on projected workloads that we don't actually love. The ones we love, we rank in the top 15. The next ones are just the starters for teams that we have to rank high, but they don't typically do well. So that's where there's the biggest gap, and that's where it makes the most sense to take receiver. Like you said, the 4 or 5 range is like where it makes the most sense.
Heath, I want you to weigh in on that, where the best spot is. And then Dave also said that anyone after round one can give you good value. But I think what I find interesting about wide receiver this year is, you know, ADP doesn't really have it this way because the ADP is a little higher on Hopkins than we are, than most of us are. Dave, I think, is the high guy on Hopkins. But I feel like Thomas, Adams, Hill, and Julio Jones are, I feel like they're like this podcast's top four. And then I think there's a lot of discrepancies in the round two or the tier two guys. Some people like Godwin. Some people like Hopkins. Some people think DJ Moore belongs there or Juju. I don't know that, like, we previously have had a top 7 or 8 that seems set in stone. I don't really feel that way this year. I wanted your take on that and just kind of where you think wide receiver is really strong as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think anywhere in the first 4 rounds. I wouldn't say that I always take a round three wide receiver, but I often do. The times that I don't, it's because I took one in round one and round two. Like Dave mentioned, any time after round one, and a lot of drafts, that means Tyreek Hill and Julio Jones. They have ADPs after round one, and I think that's just spectacular. If I can get Michael Thomas or Davante Adams at the end of the first, though, I love that. You're absolutely right. We've got those four that are pretty close to a consensus top 4. And I, in my projections, actually don't have DJ Moore that far behind them, but you can't put him in the same tier because, for one thing, he hasn't done it yet. And he's got a new quarterback and a new coach and all that stuff. But I do think there's a lot of discrepancy in how you feel about DeAndre Hopkins changing teams, how you feel about Chris Godwin with a new quarterback and how much Gronk affects him, how you feel about DJ Moore taking the next step, or even like realistically, Mike Evans should be in that discussion. Juju deserves to be in that discussion after what he did 2 years ago. So it's a little bit messy after those top 4, which is another, I guess, argument for you don't have to choose which one to take in the back half of round 2. A couple of those guys will be there in the front half or back front half of back 3, and you can just take that one.
Yeah, and Cooper Kupp is a great example. Dave has Cooper Kupp 7th. Heath has him 10th. Jamie has him 15th. ADP has him in the 4th round in half PPR. So I think, and yeah, it is consensus, Thomas, Adams, Julio, and Hill in some order. In fact, it's exactly that in PPR. Thomas, Adams, Julio, Hill for Jamie, Dave, and Heath. I don't have access to Ben's rankings. Is that how you have it too? Those top 4?
Yeah, those are my top 4.
All right, and then
you don't have AJ Brown up there?
Nope.
No, but like, obviously there's just like, there's a big group that goes after that top 4 that is going to be very different for different analysts. And as Heath said, that maybe that's a reason to take a running back or Kelsey or something like that in round 2 and wait, get that wide receiver in round 3, maybe round 4 as well. I have more wide receiver questions for you in just a bit. I am very excited, though, to talk about our new sponsor, a really, really cool website that I was messing around with earlier this morning. It's called Grammarly. And Grammarly, it's a digital writing assistant that helps more than 20 million people put their best words forward. You can sign up for free, but what you really want to do is get Grammarly Premium. That's what I have. It is incredibly helpful, and we're giving you 20% off Grammarly Premium if you go to grammarly.com/FFT. Grammarly.com/FFT, 20% off. All right, what is Grammarly? So you're writing something, you're preparing something. This could be for LinkedIn. It could be you're giving a speech. It could be whatever. Your podcast notes, if you're me. You can upload a document. Yeah, you can upload a document to Grammarly. You can type right on the website. I did that this morning. And the notes that Grammarly comes back with, the suggestions, are so helpful and things that you would never really think of. So sometimes it's just removing superfluous words and making your sentence stronger and more concise. Sometimes they suggest synonyms to make your vocabulary better. They can't help you speak, unfortunately. I didn't realize how much better, though, my writing could be until I uploaded that document to Grammarly and I saw all the things that I could be doing better. So stop using boring and bland words and start using exhilarating and rousing and stimulating words. And you can thank Grammarly for those synonyms there, by the way. Start writing better. Start being more confident. Build your writing skills with Grammarly and get 20% off Grammarly Premium when you sign up at grammarly.com/FFT. That's 20% off at grammarly.com/FFT. 20% off Grammarly Premium. GRAMMARLY.com/FFT. All right, back to the wide receivers. Got an overall strategy? Overall wide receiver strategy, Dave.
I am probably going to bake in drafting receivers with how I feel about running backs and when I can find steals at quarterback and tight end, meaning that I'm not going to target any specific receiver with the first six rounds of my draft. There's a lot who I like and plenty that I'm comfortable taking in any of those rounds. But if I need a running back and there's one that I like, I'm going to veer in that direction first. If there's a quarterback that falls and I love the value, I feel like I'm stealing him from my league, I'm taking him. Same thing with tight end. But when I don't have a running back, quarterback, or a tight end that I don't love and I don't feel like is a great value or a position of need in the case of running backs, I'm going right to that wide receiver pool. I'm diving in. And Speedo also. And I'm absolutely going to take a wide receiver because I know there will be one there that will be a good value.
Okay. Great, great value on Speedos these days. Heath, what's your wide receiver strategy if you have one?
You know, I always focus most of my offseason on coming up with positional strategies that I stick to no matter what my league does. Uh-huh. So I am fully prepared for this segment. I would like to have three wide receivers by the end of round six. Receivers a lot more important, obviously, in three wide receiver and PPR leagues. And it's important, like I generally plan on filling my flex with a receiver.
Yeah. Okay. Great. See, you have strategy. You don't even realize you are full of strategies.
I found things to say.
You're the strategy guy. Every strategy question I'm directing to you from now on, that was a beautiful answer. Ben, how about you?
I was almost going to give the exact same strategy as Heath gave, but it's for me, it's essentially, especially in PPR leagues, it's four wide receivers probably by the end of round eight, which is where I think the significant wide receiver drop-off is. It's later than most significant tier drops that we see in drafts, but it's about 40 receivers into drafts. By about that point, after Christian Kirk's kind of the last straggler that I always like to get a little bit later than he, I think, should go. By about that point, I want to make sure I have four receivers, if not five. And that's typically when I'm going to turn over to running back.
I think these are good general points. Sorry, Heath. But you've got to keep in mind that scoring, league scoring and roster limits matter a lot. If I'm in a 10-team league and I only need to start two wide receivers, I might prioritize the position even less. But if I'm in a 14-team non-PPR and I got to start three wide receivers, well, the talent pool isn't as good there as it would be in pretty much any other league. I don't know how many of you listening are actually in that exact type of format. It would be pretty amazing if even 100 of you are. But if that's the situation you're in, then there's probably a little bit more pressure to fill your roster with wide receivers.
And that was the point that I was making. In PPR, I think a three wide receiver league with one flex should be viewed as a four wide receiver league. The number 36 wide receiver is going to be a lot better than the number 36 running back. The number 48 wide receiver is going to be even more so better than the number 48 running back. And so those flexes, maybe not. Maybe you start with three running backs and just have bad wide receivers.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Those flexes are going to most likely be wide receivers. The thing I was going to ask Ben, and this happened in our mock last night, I think, how do you prevent feeling like, oh no, I took four receivers in the first six rounds and now I've had to pass on Christian Kirk three rounds in a row because he's the best value on the board, but I don't need any more receivers. I don't have any other players at any positions.
How do I prevent that?
I mean, that is something that goes wrong with this early wide receiver thing is that
very rarely. I mean, it happened in the Twitch mock the other night and I was fine. I was taking running backs that I liked at that range, but typically I was picking third and I was going to take either Andrews or Ertz on one of the turns, and both the first and second pick took Ertz and Andrews. And so I didn't take, you know, that was at the 4-5 turn. So 5-0-3, I went with another receiver, which I wasn't intending to do there. I did wind up even wide receiver heavier than usual there. But typically the way that it works out, so what I did was I started with Kamara and I took five straight receivers. And then eventually I had to pass on guys like Kirk. but I typically am not taking five receivers in the first six rounds. I think you do want five good receivers on your roster, especially if you're starting four, there's bye weeks. And there's the possibility of people missing time this year as well. Like, I think we want depth everywhere this year. We've talked about that. And then if that happens with Kirk, yes, I'm missing out on one guy in Kirk that I like, but I'm just moving over to running back at that point. But I agree totally with your point that flex should be considered basically the receiver. I also agree with Dave's point. If you're playing a 10-team league with two receivers, though, definitely add more receivers. It's way too shallow.
Okay. In terms of the flex having to be a receiver, I mean, I suppose if you take two running backs, then you take three wide receivers and you're sitting there in round six or round seven, maybe you have a quarterback or a tight end, and now you're deciding on your flex. Okay, yeah, the wide receiver is probably going to be better than the running back there. But yeah, if you take three receivers, three running backs with you, you're in a three receiver PPR league, maybe running backs are falling, and you take three running backs with your first three picks, you know, I think Heath actually kind of mentioned that. I think you can get away with that.
Right? I think if you do that, you're locking in missed games. That's what I believe. Like, if you take three running backs to their first three picks to get 16 games from each, you probably win your league.
Yeah, I mean, okay. But so you take Saquon Barkley in round one, and then Aaron Jones fell to you in round two, and then you love James Conner, who, if he stays healthy, certainly has 50 catch potential, if not more, based on what we've seen. I don't know how you feel about Jalen Samuels this year, but based on what we've seen from Conner himself, I mean, he could be good in PPR. I wouldn't do that. I would not do that, but a lot of people would.
But you to Ben's point, and like the fragility of running back, you run through the simulator on Saquon Barkley, Aaron Jones, and James Conner over the past three seasons. What are the odds you're getting 48 games from those three? It's extremely low.
Does that matter? Because you're going to get 48 games from your first three wide receivers?
Not necessarily, but to your point about the flex as well is what I was saying. Then you're probably starting this even later round receiver at flex to replace one of your top three picks missing game.
But what Dave said earlier about all the wide receivers that have averaged 10 or more PPR fantasy points, the replacements on the waiver wire at wide receiver, I mean, you can go get someone and plug them in at flex. It's not ideal, but it's so much deeper than running back.
You could almost find a flex, a PPR flex every week off the waiver wire.
Yeah, I mean,
we literally spend a couple of minutes each week on FFT and on this podcast mentioning players who you could use as a fill-in.
I do think you guys are overstating that a little. He said 49 receivers each year. That would be, in a normal 12-team league, about four receivers per team. We all take six. Like, I mean, unless you're playing in a really shallow league, and I agree, in really shallow leagues, you can. In some of the shallow leagues we played at CBS last year, I picked up Cortland Sutton and Tyler Boyd last year. I thought it was wild. But most of the leagues I play in, you're 75 to 80 receivers rostered in the league.
Fair enough. Okay, so I got some more questions. Do some sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Let's talk a little bit about round one and how many wide receivers do you think should go in round one, and when you're going to take Michael Thomas, and how format matters and all that. I mean, I think Dave do you have any non-PPR round one wide receivers?
I have Michael Thomas at 12.
Okay. Okay. In half PPR and full PPR, how many wide receivers should go in round one?
I think four is fine. I think you should expect four.
Yeah. Three to four.
Yeah. I might say three or two even.
Okay. How many wide receivers are better than Travis Kelce? Better as in should be drafted before Travis Kelce?
Good question.
Only two for sure. But up two to four, up to four. It's somewhere between, like, and I think league structure and scoring and all that stuff probably dictates whether Julio or Tyreek is better than Kelce. But Adams and Thomas for sure.
I'll go a little bit deeper, and this is just my personal choice. I think the answer is six, but you're also hearing from someone who loves DeAndre Hopkins and doesn't think he's going to miss too much of a beat in Arizona, and someone who thinks Chris Godwin's going to continue to be that slot guy for Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Now, if you disagree with those takes, then you're probably going to take Kelce ahead of both of them, and there's probably nothing wrong with that. I can't get behind Kelce as a first-round pick. I think he's an early two at best.
And I have three receivers ahead. I have Hill ahead of Adams, which I've noted before. So those three, Thomas, Hill, and Adams.
Is that in PPR that you've got Hill ahead of Adams?
Yes, but I think in half or non, I would obviously just lean that way more. Because, I mean, I know Adams is very good in those formats as well, but Hill is very good in those formats.
Hill's got more upside.
Yeah.
So I think you answered. I know Ben answered this about 40 wide receivers, I think was his answer. But at what point in your rankings do wide receivers just get like disgusting? Don't really want these guys anymore.
It's later than that for disgusting for me.
All right. So unappealing. I'll use Grammarly.
38.
Okay.
I've got Sammy Watkins at 60th, so I will say 60 or 59.
Okay.
Watkins is the unappealing guy.
Yeah.
How about that? All right. Going to be on the probably number one pass offense in the NFL. And
he might be the number four target. He might be the number five target on the number one pass offense in the NFL.
Clyde. Yeah. All right. Clyde getting in there. All right. Who's, well, before sleepers, breakouts, and busts, when are you taking Michael Thomas?
Seventh overall in PPR. If the first six picks are the big four running back plus Edwards-Helaire plus Miles Sanders, and in non-PPR, I'm not going to name all the 11 running backs I would take ahead of him. So I'll say the 1-2 turn in non-PPR.
Wait, Dalvin Cook's not even in your top seven?
Oh, yeah, Dalvin Cook should be there. So I guess that means 8 for Michael Thomas.
Okay.
I'm just writing off Dalvin Cook already. He hasn't even played it down yet.
5 in PPR. 5 in
PPR, 8 and none.
I would take him either 6 or 7 in PPR with Cook ahead of him. And the questionable running back for me would be Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
And in non-PPR?
I think I would take a running back probably regardless. I think Thomas loses so much value in non-PPR as much as I love him. But I'd probably bump him all the way back to like 12, to be honest.
It really does. I mean, it's... The catches are just incredible for him. Over 122 years in a row. It's just such an advantage over running backs, you know. But how about half PPR? I really feel like we don't talk enough about half PPR. Where do you think you're taking Michael Thomas in half PPR?
Probably 12. Probably the exact same spot.
As non-PPR, right.
Yeah, probably he just doesn't provide that huge of a gap over guys like Hill and Adams gain so much value in non, and you can get them in the second round on the turn. So if I'm at like 9, I might just be happy with Hill and Adams in the second.
But half PPR, not non.
Yeah, sorry, in half.
Yeah.
See, I think I'd be closer to where I am in PPR. Like it's 60 points. We're talking about difference between non-PPR and, or maybe 55, difference between non-PPR and half PPR for Michael Thomas, and he doesn't move at all between non-PPR and half.
Yeah, it's just more about roster construction, the way that I was thinking of it. But
me too.
He should move value-wise, sure.
All right, sleepers, breakouts, and busts. I just want to promote a few things real quick. To celebrate draft season and to thank you for all of you for being such loyal listeners, we're giving away a 75-inch and a 55-inch TV. The contest is completely free to enter. Go to cbssports.com/giveaway. And I'll also include the link in the episode description. But again, cbssports.com/giveaway. You probably don't need the episode description for that, but, you know, do that anyway. Giveaway ends August 17th. Play on cbssports.com, everybody. You're listening. You're a diehard fantasy football player. You love fantasy football. You deserve to be playing in our commissioner product on cbssports.com. In fact, I'm going to bring in Ben Schrager, because Ben Schrager, I'm not sure he played on CBS before he started working for CBS, but then he started playing, and he can tell you how much better it is than the old, stupid, ugly loser sites that he used to play on. Right, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I played on every other site before being hired here. I come here and now I have completely customizable league. Kicker points, 44-yard field goal can be 4.4 points. That's my favorite feature.
That's why Heath joined CBS.
That's why you should play at CBS, everybody. Kicker points are customizable.
But like the dynasty settings are really cool and really customizable, and it's just for
auction room.
Yeah, it's really great.
Draft room recap. Is really easy.
By the way, are you eating something?
It's absolutely hilarious.
Shrag, are you eating something?
Yeah, I've got some sunflower seeds in my mouth.
I eat Saturday.
David's Jumbo Ranch.
All right. It's always baseball season for Ben Schrager. College baseball pitcher, everybody, in case you don't know that. Get to know your producer. All right, everybody, let's do it. Favorite sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Schrager, who's your favorite sleeper? No, Gretch. Other Ben. Who's your favorite sleeper?
What, you don't want to hear from Schrager just because he's got some sunflower seeds?
Hey, Ben Schrager, do you have a favorite sleeper wide receiver?
Well, my favorite, like...
Yeah, Mecole Hardman.
Okay, Mecole Hardman for Schrager.
Ooh, I dig it. That's one of my favorite sleepers for sure. But my favorite, like, true sleeper, you can get him in any league late, is Laviska Shenault. But the way that we kind of look at sleepers is more just got, you know, earlier rounds. And I'll say Christian Kirk for that person. Kirk wasn't very efficient last year. He was much more efficient as a rookie. And the essentially the entire change is if you go look at airyards.com, you can graph it by depth of target. He was very efficient on downfield targets in his rookie season. He was very inefficient last year on downfield targets. For his 2 years combined, he's slightly better than league average. And has looked fine. And he was a very young rookie. He's going into his, I believe his age, maybe it's going to be, he's going to turn 24 during the season this year, but he was a young 22 in his rookie year. So I think this is a guy who, and he was also playing through an ankle injury last year, led the team in targets. I think this is a guy who everybody is writing off because DeAndre Hopkins is in town now, but I expect the Cardinals to throw a lot more because of any way you slice their pace stats. They were a lot quicker paced than their actual play volume. They should run more plays. They should then throw more because of that. I think Kyler Murray is going to take a significant step forward as a passer, and you can see how much he grew in the second half of the season versus the first half of the season. And I think Kirk is really well positioned now to see a lot less defensive attention because he's not the main guy. Last year, he was the guy. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald was moving around in the slot, but he was the main guy and leading the team in targets. Like I said, you have Hopkins now. He has kind of this Will Fuller advantage where he gets to work off of DeAndre Hopkins like Fuller did for so many years in Houston. I think Kirk is going to have a pretty big season and show that last year was just kind of a fluky, injury-prone second year.
On the topic of Shenault, by the way, I saw Pete Prisco in person for the first time in 4 months, and the first two words he says to me when I see him is, Laviska Shenault.
Yes.
So he he's pretty wired in Jacksonville, and I've been writing a rookie receiver story. You can read that on CBS Sports. You'll get a download on every single rookie and where to draft them. Shenault was an interesting one to go back to because he can literally line up anywhere. I mean, he even played wildcat quarterback for Colorado. And I think he ran for 7 touchdowns last year on top of what he did as a receiver. And he's one of this new breed of wide receiver who isn't very tall, but is thick and can make plays after the catch with power and speed versus just speed, which is what a lot of receivers can do. It reminds me of A.J. Brown and Deebo Samuel a little bit. Not that those guys aren't fast, but they're powerful. They're like running backs when they have the ball in their hands after the catch. And Shenault is in that same type of mold, I believe. So it's just a matter of Jacksonville using him to his strengths and using him a lot in that offense. And he could be good.
I've read this before, but I basically treat the position previews as if we're welcoming in new listeners who decided they were too cool to listen to us during the offseason. So I'll read it again. After the draft, CBSSports.com wrote this. I don't remember who exactly the author was. I'm sorry. But we wrote this about Shenault. For as much as Gardner Minshew liked to work the back shoulder game with Chark and Conley last season, most of his attempts were in the quick game underneath. The 2019 rookie averaged 7.5 intended air yards per NFL Next Gen Stats, which tied for the 10th lowest figure among 38 qualifying quarterbacks. Blah, blah, blah. That's where Shenault thrives. According to PFF's draft guide, Shenault forced 44 missed tackles over the past 2 years, the highest total of any receiver in the 2020 class, and he accomplished that in just 20 total games.
Yeah, perfect compliment to DJ Chark. And one more thing I want to note, because Dave hit on all the comps perfectly. I just used those two comps in our sleepers article this week. D.D. Westbrook is 27 in the last year of his rookie contract, has never had 800 yards in a season. Chris Conley's 28, also in the last year of his contract, has never had 8 yards in a season. That's his competition for the number two role. Perfect compliment to DJ Chark. And those two guys aren't a part of the future probably for Jacksonville whenever they're good again. They have all the incentive in the world this season. They're not going to be good to see what they have in Shenault. So I expect Shenault to play plenty.
All right, let's go
faster. Well, if he stays healthy, that's part of the problem.
Let's go a little faster here. We can't... I want to get to as many sleepers breakouts.
You don't
want to
spend 10 more minutes on Laviska Shenault?
I don't think so. I mean, I do, but it's about the listeners. Heath, who's your favorite sleeper?
Well, I'll also say that I've drafted 15 teams that I'm playing out this year so far, and over half of them have Laviska Shenault, so he would probably be my answer. But I will say, like, I try to look at my favorite wide receiver with an ADP outside of the first 10 rounds, and that would definitely in PPR be Jamison Crowder. It's underrated how good he was with Sam Darnold last year. He was on pace in 13 games. So a pretty big sample for 223 PPR fantasy points would have been 19th. I think the same number that Cortland Sutton had last year. And now the Jets have like 160 targets to replace at wide receiver from last year, the most in the NFL. They brought in Breshad Perriman. They brought in Denzel Mims. But Crowder's the one that has that connection with Sam Darnold. And we have seen it time and time again in the Adam Gase offense. It's Jarvis Landry. It's Jamison Crowder. It's those slot wide receivers that dominate the targets in his offense. I think Crowder has a legitimate shot at 130 targets this year and being a top 20 wide receiver.
Yeah, the 13-game pace for Crowder with Darnold was, or the 16-game pace with Darnold was 86 catches, 933 yards, 7 touchdowns on 133 targets. Dave, your favorite sleeper?
I'm going to give you 3 names, but I'll only really dive into one of them. The first two, you could do the friendship strategy with Jalen Reagor and DeSean Jackson and hope that one of the two ends up being great. Did that last year with Marquise Brown and Miles Boykin. It was all right. Worked out for Baltimore. I think one of those two will end up being very good for fantasy, and you can get them. I think Rager's ADP is like 118th. So it's round 10 for sure. It's not after round 10, but definitely good value there. And then Steven Sims in Washington. This is an offense that needs some playmakers. McLaurin's the top guy in the passing game. I think Sims has a chance to be the second best guy. He can line up in the slot. He can line up wide. He's got good speed. And last year, 15 plus PPR points in each of his last 3 games. So hopefully that's a springboard for him to step into a bigger role and see a lot of targets for a Washington team that has a huge question mark at running back. May end up having to throw a decent amount this year.
Let's do breakouts. Dave, Heath, Ben, go.
Breakout wide receiver. Goodness. It feels like Calvin Ridley and DK Metcalf and AJ Brown are like everybody's top breakout choices. And I don't really love doing what everybody else is doing, but I get it. I'm going to say Ridley. I think Calvin Ridley does have a chance to exceed the numbers he's put up, not total the last 2 seasons, but individually. You know, he matched his rookie year numbers in his second season, almost matched it, and he played fewer games. I could see him stepping up more this year. Don't think he's going to be up to where Chris Godwin was last year, but certainly get a lot closer to 85, 90 catches this year. And maybe get back to double-digit touchdowns in that Atlanta offense.
Calvin Ridley, very popular breakout. And I took him on Tuesday night in a draft earlier than I wanted to. But if you like a guy, you take it was like mid-third round. What did I have, the 4th pick in that draft? So 4th pick of round 3. Okay, Heath, who's your favorite breakout?
I was going to say Calvin Ridley, so I didn't say DJ Moore. But sorry, Ben, I'm saying DJ Moore. If you have 1,100 yards playing with Kyle Allen, you are awesome, especially if you do it at the age that he did it. He has a little touchdown regression that's going to help him out. I would also expect he could be a little bit more efficient. Robbie Anderson should help take a little pressure off of him. If Teddy Bridgewater is legitimately good, then DJ Moore could be a top 3 wide receiver this year.
And he is a third-year receiver who's in a new offense with a new quarterback. And we started this podcast by talking about how that could be troublesome for wide receivers. But we really, I'll speak for myself. I think I've got a good beat on what Carolina's going to do. And that's fast hitting passing game. Accuracy is important inside of 15 yards. Let the receivers make a play after the catch. That's what LSU did last year with Joe Burrow. They won the national championship. It worked great. That is a perfect setup for DJ Moore. That fits all of his strengths perfectly.
DJ Moore, his ADP is also very favorable. You might be able to get him late round 3 or into round 4. And in our draft, so DJ Moore could be a round 2 pick. He is one player, though, that I've sort of identified, at least in my opinion, as having some of the toughest cornerback matchups in the NFL. And I was surprised when we talked about slot receivers. His slot percentage was extremely low last year. So he's mostly lined up on the outside. He's got the Bucs twice, and they were great against number one wide receivers late in the year last year, and some of the best number one wide receivers in the NFL. So Bucks in week 2, the Chargers in week 3, they allow the third fewest fantasy points to wide receivers last year. Arizona in week 4, Patrick Peterson. Chicago in week 6, I don't know how tough that'll be. New Orleans in week 7, he didn't face Marshawn Lattimore in 2019. At Kansas City in week 9, wide receivers typically don't do very well at Kansas City. Tampa Bay again in week 10. Couple tough corners with Green Bay in week 15. So I don't know. Does that matter to you? I think DJ Moore does on paper have some very difficult cornerback matchups.
you're assuming that all those teams are going to use their best corner against him.
Yes,
what I would
correct.
Be concerned about. What, well, I don't know if they're all going to do that. Some of them might play zone and just tell their cornerbacks to line up.
Well,
on
but
a
they but they have
the
not only do they have good cornerbacks, they do well against number one wide receivers. I mean, Patrick Peterson.
Sure,
Tampa Bay.
I get what you're saying. I would look at the pass rushes and figure out which ones could actually get to Bridgewater in 3 seconds or less, because that's going to be what might ruffle Bridgewater and hurt his completion rate in those games. And you mentioned a lot of teams that have some pretty good pass rushes.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it.
All right. I just needed to bring it up. Ben, who's your favorite breakout?
These guys hit some good ones. It probably should be AJ Brown if we're pretending like people didn't listen all offseason, but I'm not going to say him because I think if you've listened to any episode.
What's his ceiling?
His ceiling?
Yeah.
Top five in any format.
Okay. Yeah, I'm approaching it as people don't know that Ben Gretsch loves AJ Brown and the guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's concerns about target volume, and any player that I love is going to, like him, is going to be, because I think there's so much there with talent and that there's a lot of upside if they do end up throwing more than expected. And yeah, there's a lot we could get into on AJ Brown, but I want to highlight Will Fuller. Actually, we've talked a lot about him. He's been banged up a lot. One guy I want to compare him to is not a natural comp at all. Keenan Allen. After Keenan Allen's fourth year, I remember I wrote about him, and this is part of the reason I think about him in relation to Fuller. One of the big points I made on Allen was that Allen's injuries occurred in his third and fourth year. People thought he was injury prone. He'd only played 9 games in those 2 seasons. And so at that point, also, people would talk about how he hasn't been that good yet. But the vast majority of his games had come as a rookie and a second year player. He had been better as a third and fourth year player as he got a little older, as we expect players to progress, but he'd missed way more time in those seasons. So he hadn't played a high percentage of games. So his overall career numbers didn't look great. Fuller to me is very similar. If you look at Will Fuller's first 4 seasons, he played the most games that he's played in any season as a rookie, 14 games. He saw 92 targets. He's never before seen or never since seen even more than 71 targets because he's never since played more than 11 games. So his career numbers don't look amazing, but the last 2 years, his catch percentage has been massively better. His yards per target has been massively better. He's been significantly more efficient as a player. His per game numbers, his yards per game are great, but his per game numbers are also limited by the fact that, yes, he's left a lot of games injured. And we know that he's injury prone, and we know that he could miss time, but he's got a lot of things working for him. He's going into his age 26 season, hasn't played a ton over the last couple of years. This is a guy who had an amazing prospect profile coming out, and I still care about that. It's not just about what he's done at the NFL level. That was true of Keenan Allen as well. I very much believe Keenan Allen had the talent to be an NFL receiver. I think Will Fuller does as well. And he showed that as soon as he stepped on the field as a rookie and in a sophomore, even though he wasn't amazing, he was good. He was good for those ages. If Fuller stays healthy, he's the only receiver on that roster right now that has a significant rapport with Deshaun Watson. And we know there's a shortened offseason. I don't think Brandon Cooks is going to come in and be Deshaun Watson's clear number one over Fuller. And I don't think Randall Cobb's going to do that. So Fuller is a guy now without DeAndre Hopkins there. There's still enough other good players to draw attention from him at times, but he's been good enough and he has a long enough track record that I think if he stays healthy, he's going to have a monster season right as he's entering his prime that we haven't really seen him be able to put together yet because of injuries.
I leaned forward because I was going to say something about Keenan Allen having 1,000 yards as a rookie, but I had a better question, no troll. At what point, because Fuller's entering year 5, like, is at what point for you, Ben, because I think this is a question we've never answered. Do you stop caring about pedigree and draft? Like, is it 7 years? Is it?
No, it's not years. It's not year.
Like, so the whole career you care?
No. Okay. Will Fuller has been injured a lot. He has not played a lot of games. And so I'm looking at him holistically and our sample on him is pretty small. And what we have is 42 games. That's like just a little bit more than 2.5 seasons worth of games for a typical player. And I'm not ignoring the fact that he's been injury prone. And then similar thing was true of Keenan Allen. And then the other point I was trying to make is even in that 42 game sample, 24 of those games, a lot more than half, or a little bit more than half at least, were in his first and second season when we don't expect guys to be elite. He's been much better in his 18 games the last 2 years, but he hasn't played as many games. And so it kind of masks the fact that he's now physically at a point where we should expect him to be really good. He's been efficient the last 2 years, but he just hasn't played a lot of games lately. It's more just a holistic thing where I think this guy has always been productive when healthy. He was productive at a young age at the NFL. It continued from college on. So I do still care about it with him. And I disagree with you, I guess, that he wasn't productive enough yet at this point to his career. I think he's been productive.
I didn't say that. It was a legitimate question. Like how long, because I think somebody hears this and they're like, Will Fuller is 26 years old. He's been in the NFL for almost half a decade. At what point do we stop caring what round he was drafted in?
No, I mean, it makes
it's not what round he was drafted in. It's the fact that he had, 1,000 yards and 15 touchdowns.
Okay, at what point do we stop caring about his college stats then?
Right. Like, at what point is he the guy who he's been in the NFL for, the last four seasons?
Yeah. But to support
Ben, at what point do you accept that?
I think people
this is
forget.
Not a Will Fuller question. This is a philosophical, we talk about draft pedigree, I think, more than the average fantasy football player pays attention to. We talk about college production and what age they were for that college production a lot more than the average fantasy football player ever thinks about. And so when we're saying that about a second or third year player, I think that intuitively probably holds value to everyone who's listening. When we're saying that about a fourth or fifth year player, I think there's a question of at what point does that stop mattering?
And to just give you a straight quick answer, it will stop mattering when it's no longer explaining who the player is because his production is significantly different. But for this player, he's been hurt and he was good right when he entered the league and has had big games in every season, even though he's been a little bit sporadic. To me, it still matters for this player.
Look, I think people really overlook Will Fuller's 2018 season. He played 7 games. He was on pace for 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns. And he had 3 games out of 7 with 100 yards and a touchdown. So was he completely consistent? No. But he was certainly good enough to warrant being drafted where he's being drafted now, which is probably the 7th round, I remember off the top of my head. And DeAndre Hopkins isn't on the team. So, it seems like there's potential there. I mean, I support you, Ben. Hooray for Ben.
My entire thing was not a Will Fuller question.
Heath, I think Devontae Parker, right? I don't even know if anybody cared about his pedigree anymore.
Then Corey Davis. He's been hurt for half the time he's in the NFL. We just found out he had to have toe surgery this offseason because he played with a broken toe all year last year.
Those are great examples of guys who weren't as good at the NFL level. As I would argue, Fuller has been when you control for the fact that he's missed so much time.
For sure. All right, let's do busts now. Heath, who's the biggest bust?
Oh, I'd really rather just look up Corey Davis's best games from his first 2 years.
He had some good ones.
He had some real shining moments. Unfortunately, a couple of them happened in the playoffs, so we don't count those. No, biggest bust. I guess it's DeAndre Hopkins. We've talked a lot about how many targets he's going to get, and I got talked up a little bit by Dave. And I've got him at 140 now in Arizona. I think Jamie's expecting 130. The problem is I don't think it's fair at all to expect him to go from Deshaun Watson to a new offensive system with a quarterback that all the evidence we have right now is not as good a passer as Deshaun Watson and be more efficient on a per target basis than he was with Deshaun Watson. And 4 of his last 5 years, he was below 8 yards per target. I've got him projected at 8 yards per target, so better than 4 of his last 5 years. So again, and trying to stretch to get to where everybody else is, simple math, 140 times 8 is 1,120 yards. 1,120 yards is almost never a top 5 wide receiver.
Right. And 8 yards per target, I mean, Tyreek Hill is usually over 10. Chris Godwin career is 10 yards per target. Michael Thomas is 9.3, which is a little bit low, but Hopkins and Devontae.
No, 9.3 is not a little bit low.
Hill and Godwin.
It's depth of target influence for Thomas. The deeper the target, the higher the YPT. It's a straight correlation.
Yeah, sure. So Hopkins, when it comes to the truly elite wide receivers, lags a little bit in yards per target.
Well, he did in 2019. In 2018, he had 9.9 yards per target.
Okay,
that's part of the reason he had 2019.
In 2019, he had 20 deep ball targets. Only 8 were catchable. I think that impacts him. He had more catchable targets that were deep and more deep targets overall in 2018. The question is, how often is he going to get targeted deep in Arizona? I think there's going to be at least 25 times this year where he will get thrown at 20 plus yards. More importantly, I think he's going to get targets constantly in the red zone. I think that's their solution for their red zone woes last year. They're just going to throw it up and let Hopkins make one of those one-handed behind his head catches like we've seen him do before. He's extremely talented. He is not a burner, but he can still get downfield and beat one-on-one coverage. I think he's going to see a lot of one-on-one coverage because that's how Arizona plays you. They spread out defenses. If you don't play one-on-one coverage against a wide receiver, there's probably somebody who's wide open. And even if it's Larry Fitzgerald, it's going to burn you. He's going to be very good this year. I don't think he's going to be top three good, but I'm easily taking him in round two if he's there.
This is another situation where we talked about with T.Y. Hilton, where, and Ben had referenced this, where his average depth of target went way down last year, and Hopkins did fall last year. Like Hilton, the problem was if your average depth of target falls, your yards after the catch should go up a little bit, and his didn't really move. He didn't really do much after the catch, despite the fact that he was catching the ball 3 yards closer to the line of scrimmage on average.
All right, Dave, who's the biggest bust for you?
I'll say Beckham. As much as I want to dig into Will Fuller and why Ben's wrong on it, I'll save that for another time. But I think Odell Beckham's in a tough spot to bounce back from where he's been over the last 3 years, or be better than what he was over the last 3 years. You know, he hasn't even had 1,100 yards each of the last 3 years, or more than 6 touchdowns. And injuries have played a role. There's no doubt about it. But this is a Cleveland offense that we've been talking about all offseason long. They're going to be more conservative. They've got these two amazing running backs that they can lean on. They added Austin Hooper, who will absolutely make an impact in the red zone. And it looks like Jarvis Landry is going to be healthy. So I have a hard time believing Beckham's going to see more than the 8.3 targets per game. I think that goes down. And that was a career low for him. And when they get into the red zone, teams aren't going to say, well, we got to stop Austin Hooper and Jarvis Landry. They're going to stop Odell Beckham. And the Browns are going to say, cool, we're going to run it down your throat anyway. So I think Odell Beckham could get overdrafted. I don't like taking him in round three at all.
All right. The ideal Odell Beckham, like the top shape Odell Beckham, doesn't need red zone touchdowns though. You know, like he's a big playmaker, but I don't know. But Dave, he's going ninth. He's the ninth wide receiver off the board in fantasy
pros.
It's yeah,
way too high.
It's higher.
You're
than
drafting him because of what he did in his first 3 years with a completely different quarterback and team in the NFL.
All right, Ben, finish the show with your biggest bust.
I don't actually have like clear busts at receiver. Where I think part of the reason I take so many receivers early is it's more projectable volume. Targets are a lot more projectable over a full season. So I'll just name a couple guys that I typically don't draft, but I don't necessarily think they're going to be terrible. Amari Cooper is one. I just think that's going to be a more spread out offense. And then Thielen is the one that I'll jump into. Adam Thielen, low volume offense coming off a soft tissue injury at age 30. I don't hate Thielen. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's going to be fine. He'll be a solid wide receiver too. But to me, the question of like Thielen or AJ Brown, they're very similar. They both should have the clear number one role in their offenses, except Brown to me is a guy that you could hit on a generational elite wide receiver. Thielen's not going to necessarily do that at age 30. I know we haven't seen it before, like Heath likes to say, but I like to try to find guys before we've seen it. That's where you get a lot of a positive surplus value. So Thielen, it would be Brown or it would be Diggs if I'm going to look at guys who are extremely talented, who could have career years in very similar situations. I don't get the risk with the age and the coming off an injury for a guy like Thielen with his profile in a low volume offense.
Yeah, and I would say Thielen played hurt in 2018 too. So even though he didn't miss the games, I think there are some injury concerns there for Adam Thielen. There's some volume concerns, and I'll tell you all about the volume concerns and what it means if you're on a team that's bottom five in the NFL in pass attempts, what it has meant over the last 5 years. How many times can you get a top 12 wide receiver in non-PPR? How many times can you get that in PPR? We'll talk all about that as we go through ADP tomorrow on Wide Receiver Preview Part 2. All right, good show, guys. Thank you very much. Remember to go to cbssports.com/giveaway. Remember to go to cbssports.com/fantasy and sign up for a league. Remember to tell your friends about our podcast. Even if they're in your... fine, not the ones in your league. I don't care. But everybody else, tell them about this podcast. For Dave, for Heath, for Ben, for other Ben, I'm Adam. See you later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.